using her skills as a licensed mental health counselor, Dr. Lisa helps people live happy, fulfilling lives full of creativity and excitement. Do you believe that each person has a unique personality that needs to be explored in order to maintain a satisfying and successful life? Good, because the doctor is in.
Hello, this is Dr. Lisa Blanchfield talking with you again from Dr. Lisa's World. I have been a little bit busy. I picked a topic that I think will be interesting. We're getting into the love month, into the Valentine's Day time of year. So I wanted to talk a little bit about a topic that I've yet to really master. I wouldn't say I'm an expert on, but it's something that I have found to be a learning process. That would be effective marital therapy, couples therapy. And I can say I was married myself for 20 years and I've been single for 20 years. And I use this as a disclaimer with couples because they automatically want to know if I'm an expert on relationships or an expert on the marriage process, the marital issues. So I don't feel as if I can provide expert advice. It's not the area of my practice that I would say I spend most of my time helping people with. But off and on, families convince me, couples convince me, referrals from one couple to another. And so I try to work on it with people. I think relationship status is a very private area of people's lives, and what's going on in the relationship should be between two people. So I don't post that information or talk about it. And I find sometimes confidentiality wise, people are reluctant to talk in a therapy session. So when a couple comes to me, I know it's very private and I understand that it's personal and they would like it to remain personal, but they do share and I try to make it comfortable for them. So I'm going to explain a little bit about my marital counseling skills. When an individual comes to me for what they believe is a personal struggle, sometimes they don't recognize that it's a marital issue, but they'll talk for an entire session, like 60 minutes, about their spouse. So I listen and then I gently remind them that I thought they came to talk to me about what's happening with them, but then it's not about them, it's about the person they live with. Could be a husband, could be a wife, could be they're cohabitating, but I can definitely relate to the influence that the relationship has on the marriage. And so I try to work with them to kind of unpeel the layers of, you're coming to me to talk about your problems, but you haven't mentioned much about yourself. You're talking about your husband. So that's like kind of how I get introduced to what's happening in the relationship and understand that it might be a marital issue. The positive years that I had, and I explained to people of my 20-year marriage, there were many successes, including my three children, and they're my blessings. And the other side of it is that there were damaging years, damaging times, the separation and divorce. And I also have a PTSD diagnosis from the marriage, which I didn't have prior to those 20 years. So that's why I'm a survivor of trauma. And I explain it that it's part of my 20-year marriage. I try to forget about the tough days. I don't focus on the tough days. It's few and far between when I have a trigger, but then there are reminders. Sometimes it's difficult for me to work with couples when there's domestic violence and I have to listen to one side or the other, and I can relate to the behaviors and I can understand the abuse and I can understand the origin sometimes. So there are some triggers for me as well, but typically, I try to get through it, not thinking about myself, even though something can bring us right back to those feelings of fear, uncertainty, pain. And of course, I don't take sides. I'm just listening. But sometimes it will remind us. But after many years of my own personal therapy, self-help strategies, working in this environment, I feel like I'm normal now and I have less flashbacks, fewer examples that couples give me sort of impact me now. But then recently I went to my primary physician, and of course physicians ask now about your mental health. If you've all been recently, they'll ask you how you're doing. My physician asks me usually, and he did this day, so how is your PTSD? And I looked at him, I was silent because I forget that that's in the record, and I didn't answer him, I just stared at him. And then he said, do you need a refill of any medication? And I said, no, I'm okay. And then I felt it was an awkward response that I'm okay, but it's almost like you forget what's happening until it comes to you. So that's one of the reasons why marital therapy is a little bit difficult for me to listen to the stories. But I digress, so let me go back. So I usually tell my clients, whatever happens, whatever has happened, think of it all as blessings. I start out with, you know, what punishments from God are not gifts. You have beautiful children. Think about your children. Think about your family. I explain my history of domestic violence, marital trauma, which I think in turn helps them to know that I have experienced the situation of being in a marriage, and especially if they're going through separation, divorce, they can relate to me. So the other reason I don't usually prefer to talk with couples is because I'm not really a success story. So I don't have that secret to how your love is going to last and how to make it better and what are the best things to do. And so sometimes people come to you with the idea that you're the expert. For example, if you're counseling heroin addicts, I remember my mentor, Dr. Anthony Nappi in Utica, New York. I worked with him during my doctoral degree, and he used to tell me, you don't know what's going on here with these addicts, so please don't talk. Just listen to what they have to say. And he used to really give me a lot of good advice. I think the weakness that I have in these cases are to start, well, how are you feeling? Like, they'd come in, and I had one addict, he was really suffering. He was physically sick, and he came in and he looked at me and I said, how are you feeling today? And he looked at me and he shouted, I'm feeling horrible, like I want to die. And I thought, okay, I don't know what to do. I'm going to call Dr. Nappi. Dr. Nappi's going to come up. So I deferred to him, and he worked well, obviously, with his patients. And he used to provide them with the prescription for Suboxone, which is the miracle drug that helps most people addicted to opiates. So I learned then that if you don't know, it's better to be quiet. It's better to say less. It's better to not pretend like you know exactly what someone's going through. But then again, if you don't feel you can help someone, they get so frustrated. So I'm kind of caught between, I like to work with people with marital therapy, but I also have a disclaimer regarding my abilities. So what I usually do is I try to give some advice, I talk about communication, and then I started reading the book called The Five Love Languages by Dr. Gary Chapman. And a few years ago, I was late in the game learning about this book. Everybody knew about it. It was published originally in 1992, so it's been around a long time. And there's a newer edition in 2015. I'm not sure how I missed it, but then I realized I didn't really focus the last 25 years on marriage therapy. I've been working more with families and children and teenagers and separation and divorce. So I might have missed it, but it's an amazing resource because it changes the game for so many people. When you start to read it, understand it, take the quizzes, figure out what your love language is, that's how you can actually try to save your relationship, because you start to realize how the other person feels. It's so rewarding at times when a family can be reunited after separation, after they work on something like this, they get the book and they practice with me, they do their homework. I really believe that if we can get people out of unhealthy relationships and make it work, it will save the family, it'll save the children. And I'm a catalyst for recovering, because I don't ever believe it's the right thing to do to just break up, move on, and figure out how the kids are going to see the parent later. Because now I'm doing supervised visitation therapy with kids who don't have contact with the parent because of an acrimonious separation and divorce. So I'm on the other side of it, and I really try to help these families to think about the children. So off and on, I get these requests. As I said, a husband or a wife calls me. I try to refer them to someone that I feel like has more expertise. But I've read a lot of self-help books, audiobooks. I listen to podcasts. They can do the same. There are a lot of positive marital techniques that I can give to people. But then again, I always go back to Gary Chapman's book, and I start to think about how this couple would fit in understanding it. And then we work in session, actually teaching them about the five love languages. How they feel about the book will really determine the outcome. So if they can just try to understand there are five love languages that people speak, the different love languages are what causes the conflict, because the misunderstanding is when one person likes acts of service and the other person wants physical touch, there is a problem immediately, right? So you have to understand that the damage is caused by having these different types of love languages, right? And then if you don't actually listen to your partner and find out what love language they are, there is going to be conflict. So the five love languages are in detail in the book. They are words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch, listed 1 through 5. When I was teaching this to a couple recently, of course people are nosy, and I don't mind. The wife asked me, so which love language are you? And I thought about it, and then I said, well, I think I speak all five, because that may be the reason I'm single. I like all five. And she said, don't you have to pick one? Well, you have to have a primary, and then probably the one you're least interested in. Like, the, if you're not interested in acts of service, you don't need them to help you and do chores and take care of the laundry and do the grocery shopping. You can do that all yourself, but you're into the words of affirmation. You need that text that says, I love you so much. You're going to start to work with what you want and need and what you can say, oh, okay, that's not my priority. But the problem is, in order to communicate, we have to know which love language we are. So the first thing we do is work on the quiz, which tells you which love language you is probably your primary that you most adhere to. And it really does work. I had a couple, and I was helping them for a while. And I do have a nickname sometimes. I don't do it in fun to joke. I just don't like to call people by their names. So, and I even told this couple what I called them. They didn't think it was that amusing. But anyway, their issue, they came to me with the issue that they had no sex on school nights. So I told them after a few sessions that I really felt like that was the theme, because what was happening was the husband was saying, you can't have a rule like this. The wife imposed the rule because for her, it wasn't about her primary love language wasn't affection and physical touch. She wanted him to do all these chores on school nights, which neither of them went to school and they had no kids. So the school night rule really kind of confused me. But anyway, that's what they called it. So we continued on. The primary love language for the husband being physical touch, it wasn't working for him. Like, he couldn't understand this. And then her love language was actually receiving gifts. She wanted him to give her expensive bags and shoes, and they had a big, big, beautiful house, and she wanted everything materialistically, but she said no sex. So we worked through it, and I tried my best. She kept ignoring her husband's desire to have more physical touch, obviously, and was working on getting a gift, which I said, you're probably not getting the gift if there isn't, if he's not feeling satisfied, of course. So anyway, after many sessions without the physical touch, the husband became very frustrated. He felt unloved. They couldn't seem to get it, that their love languages were opposite, and they didn't care enough to change, which is also part of the problem. when people don't want to change, they come to me and I listen and we talk and we go over it. But if they don't want to change, the outcome is probably going to be the same. So Gary Chapman designed his work to be not only an explanation of the five love languages, but a tool you can actually use to analyze which love language you speak. And then with the profile questionnaire, it determines how our behavior equates to our primary love language. For example, the questions relate to the topics: what do we complain about the most to our spouse, about what they're doing, what they're not doing, what they fail to accomplish, what you want them to do, right? These discussions go on and on. What have you asked your spouse to do that he has refused to acknowledge? That's another good question. How do you regularly express love to your spouse? How do you use terms of endearment? Do you talk to them in a nice, calm way? Sometimes the couples buy the book, read it, or read the online electronic version. They come back, they get their profile results, and they think they know what their love language is. And then in session, sometimes they just argue about what the other one wants and they're not going to do it. And then it just becomes a big discussion. So the book tries to teach you how to accept your spouse's love language in a healthy way and then understand it's their emotional need. And when it's not met, it creates the environment to deal with a lot of other issues, because we all live in this crazy world and there's so many different areas to cause chaos for us, right? So when you don't have a solid emotional, strong bond with your spouse, your husband, your wife, your girlfriend, whoever it is, this is where the relationship breaks down. So first you have to find out what your love language is, and then we can go from there. The love language that I find to be most effective is words of affirmation for everyone, because that's probably my primary. This is explained as a way to express your love for someone emotionally and use words to build up your partner. So in other words, Chapman has explained, and he quotes Solomon, the author of the ancient Hebrew wisdom and that literature that was written by Solomon, the tongue has the power of life and death. And I think it's human nature that we're not cognizant of the other person's needs and feelings of affirmations, because we say things, life or death, we say things that could really hurt someone. So the hurtful words that we use, that's not showing love. You love the person, but you use these horrible words and lash out at them and gaslight them. And how many times a day do you actually give your loved one a compliment? I say to these couples, I've been practicing this with everybody for years in therapy, with parents and their children. I ask them, did you say something nice to them today? Something nice to them today? Did you tell them that they're amazing? Did you give them power by saying, I love you so much? I find most people complain negatively, look for things that are not that important, but they make it important. And I think we should control what we're saying to someone and actually think about it. Let me say something nice. Let's not say always say something to hurt the person. Let's say something to compliment them. So I just want to tell you a funny story happened the other day. I love living in Jersey City. It's my home for the past 10 years. The people are friendly. They also like stare at you and sometimes make comments and you end up in a conversation. So I was not feeling great one day. I was doing some retail therapy and I was in an aisle and this woman walked right up to me, looked at me, and she looked down and she said, I just love your sneakers. And I looked at her and I thought, well, that was a nice thing to say. Thank you. And she said, also, you have very little feet. You're so lucky because look, and she was like explaining her size and how it's hard to find sneakers. And we had a whole discussion about sneakers and she gave me that compliment. And I just thought about it that always pay it forward. Like I was in a better mood. And when someone tells you something, oh, your hair looks nice, or I like your coat, you always get a little lift from that. But we don't do that in relationships. We don't say, you look great today, or I'm so happy that you're my husband. I ask them, can you just say something nice? Think, It's difficult. Sometimes they have to write it down. We have to practice it. No, try to change how you talk to the person. Improve the communication. Nagging never works. We all know that. You can't nag a person and tell them, I need to motivate you by complaining to you. And it's not usually productive. Hopefully we positively work on our relationships. It's coming into the new month with our Valentine's Day celebration. So I wish everybody could have a very healthy and happy new year as well. I haven't talked to you since then. And I thank everyone at New Pod City as always. And we'll talk soon. Thank you again.
You've been listening to Dr. Lisa's World. Be sure to visit her Facebook page at Dr. Lisa's World.